This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about real-life heroes in Hacksaw Ridge, fake heroes in Doctor Strange, and a whole bunch of other things with trolls, the Eagle Huntress, and Closet Monster. I'm also going to be talking about the news, Trailer Park, and the box office predictions. Of course, I'll also go into the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I'm actually going to pass a lot of the news because this seems to be kind of a slow news week when it comes to movies. I mean, it's a huge news week when it comes to stuff like the election, but I don't talk politics here. We're taking a break from politics, and sometimes on this radio station you're on, it's the only time you get a break from politics, and that's good. Nothing bad about a distraction now and then, so I'm going to talk more about movies, but since there's nothing big happening in terms of, there's a couple release dates shifting around, you know, like The Dark Tower is getting pushed a little farther back, but I mean, this is all like rumor and speculation and very early development news. Nothing is rocking the planet when it comes to movie news this week. So let's talk a little bit about Halloween. You thought I was going to let the horror movies go. We went through all of October and I was talking horror movies, had horror movie music, was doing a horror movie a week, at least one to review. And you're like, okay, phew, we can talk about something else. Well, no, I have a little bit of discussion on horror movies because, you know, I'm kind of wrapping up what my Halloween was. And I ended up watching more than 50 movies in the course of October, which actually is somewhat on the low end for me. Last year, I looked on my Letterboxd account, and I watched something like in the mid 60s, like 65 or 67 movies in the month of October. And I remember 2 years ago, I had bought the Universal Monsters box set DVD that had 30 movies and I watched one each day. And that's in addition to everything else I had to watch. Well, this year, I only watched about 50, which isn't bad. I mean, that's not a bad number. I mean, that's more than one a day, but that's also including all the regular releases that I had to go see. That includes documentaries that I had to watch for the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards. These are things that are already coming through the pike. And yeah, I went to a horror movie marathon and I did a marathon watching event with my kids. And always on Halloween, I watch a bunch of movies on Halloween weekend. I talked last week about some of my favorite horror movies, and one of them I put out there was The Thing, which is John Carpenter's 1982 film. And some things kind of came to light when I finally watched it. I watched, and I like doing this, I watched all of the things. I watched The Thing from Another World, which was Howard Hawks movie. Then I watched the 1982 version by John Carpenter. Then I watched the remake / prequel that was done in 2011, which I think gets a bum rap. It's not a bad movie. It's not great. It's nowhere near Carpenter's vision. But it's actually not a bad little film to watch along with the others. And there was something that hit the entertainment, the blogosphere news cycle for a couple months ago, and it was about John Carpenter's The Thing, and somebody had pulled from, I guess it was either an old interview or a commentary track by Dean Cundey, who was the cinematographer for that movie, and he was talking about how they determined whether somebody was a thing or not. Because there's always the big question at the end of the movie. Spoiler alert, by the way, I'm going to be talking about the end of The Thing, so if you haven't gone and seen it yet, go watch it and then listen to the rest of the show. But at the end, it's always a big debate on whether MacReady or Childs is the thing. You know, are they human or not? Now, everyone has their theory on that, but Dean Cundey came out and said, well, what they did when they shot this is they used a pen light. They use this a lot. They use a pen light and it reflects off of the human eyeball and it gives kind of life to the, I mean, if you watch this in movies, you'll notice there's a little dot of white light in people's eyes quite often. And sometimes it's set lights, but sometimes they actually use a pen light to get that and it makes people look more alive. Otherwise, it's dark and they kind of look like, you know, those dead eyes of a shark. And Cundey was saying that they used that to show when people were human and they didn't put it on people that were the thing. Now, that, of course, made all this news and people talking about it, but it was BS because it only is relevant right before the thing reveals itself. In the movie, for example, when Bennings is being changed and they catch him in the middle of it and he runs out into the snow, you look at him, his eyes are blank. That kind of makes him look a little creepy. And when Palmer changes on the couch, he does not have that in his eyes. But here's the thing. There's several other characters that are clearly the thing. And there's no time from when you see them with the pen light in their eye between that point and when they turn, like Norris, when he has a heart attack. You see him in a couple scenes earlier, he's got the light in his eye. And Palmer, actually, literally right before he turns into the thing, a couple shots earlier, he's got the pen light in his eye. So just to put that to rest, that was all clickbait. There is no definitive answer on who was the thing and who wasn't at the end of the movie. And that's okay. Now, the other movie that I watched that's one of my favorite horror movies is the 1978 version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And again, I went back and I didn't watch all of them. I didn't watch the 1993 version, but I watched the 56 version with Kevin McCarthy. I watched the 78 version with Donald Sutherland and Brooke Adams. And then I rewatched the Invasion with Nicole Kidman and Jane Earl Craig, which is terrible. It's utterly forgettable and does nothing new. And you almost forget that it exists in this remake cascade. But one of the things with Invasion of the Body Snatchers that I always wish they would have done a sequel to the 1978 version of it. And here's what I would do. I'm going to pitch it now because I'm not going to make this. In the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the pod people take over, and 1978, the assumption is at the end of the movie, that's what happened. Well, what you do is you have it take place in a biodome that somewhere outside of San Francisco, they did one of those biodome experiments where they lock people away for, say, 20 years. And they were cut off from society, and then they emerge 20 years later. So here they are coming out in 1998, and they discover that the world hasn't changed in 20 years because without emotion, you don't have the creativity and the drive. And so everybody's using the same styles and the same clothes and the same haircuts. And that would be the lead into the story. And then what you do is you get Donald Sutherland to come back, and here he is as an old man, but he's still wearing that same outfit and the same hairstyle. Because that sort of emotionless society has never progressed. And because it's 20 years later, they have no need for pods, so they have no way of taking over these people. And so that's where you have the conflict. So, you know, hey, somebody want to make that? Great. Get Donald Sutherland, get Veronica Cartwright, get Brooke Adams. That's my pitch for an Invasion of the Body Snatcher sequel. We're going to be talking about more of the movies that are coming out, but first let's roll into the trailer park. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. First one I want to hit is 20th Century Women. It opens on December 25th.
I think maybe you guys can help me with Jamie.
How do you be a good man?
Don't you need a man to raise a man?
No, I don't think so.
I think you're what's going to work for him. Well, it
seems so real. You just feel guilty because it's just me and you.
You don't know what I'm feeling.
I see the shapes.
Having a kid seems like the hardest thing.
How much you love the kid, you're just pretty much screwed.
This is a very typical award bait film, and it looks like it's well done. It's directed by the guy who did Beginners, which is a fantastic movie. I'm curious, because some of these movies can be very quirky and cool, and some of these movies can be overly preachy and boring. But it's got Greta Gerwig in it, and kind of like a different role, which I'm kind of looking forward to seeing. The next one I want to talk about is T2, not for Terminator 2, but the sequel to Trainspotting, opens in the UK in January, opens in America February 3rd.
Choose life. Choose Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and hope that someone, somewhere cares.
Missed you, mate.
I missed you too, Spud.
Choose looking up old flames, wishing you'd done it all differently.
Do you still take heroin?
No.
And choose watching history repeat itself. Choose your future.
Call the police.
What shall I say?
Just tell them we're dead.
And smother the pain with an unknown dose of an unknown drug made in somebody's kitchen. And then take a deep breath.
When I first heard that they were doing a sequel to Trainspotting, I was a little bit nervous. But the fact that Danny Boyle was on board and all the original cast was on board, I'm all for it. And when you watch this trailer, it has the energy of the original Trainspotting. Trainspotting was so visceral and had such energy that it made a compelling movie about some of the strangest people you're ever going to see. And it looks like you come back to that. And it's great. I'm looking forward very much to seeing Trainspotting T2. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Trolls and the Eagle Huntress.
Because we can, can, can! Uh-oh. 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 Uh-oh.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's jump right into the movie reviews. Yes, I'm going to be talking about something relevant to this week. Sorry for the horror movie diversion, but everybody likes to talk about The Thing and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. They're classics. But let's talk about something that's also a classic, Trolls. The Troll dolls were classic. I mean, I was a kid in the 70s and the 80s, and I remember them. I always thought they were the ugliest little things in the world. They kind of looked like the girl on Full House, the little baby. I mean, she turned out to be, well, the twins turned out to be rather attractive women, but as babies, they looked a little odd, but it was Full House. So, you know, I guess I'm shaming kids that were babies in the 80s now. My apologies. Anyways, the Troll dolls have been around since, I think, at least the 60s. I had a radio show host, Mike McConnell in Cincinnati, remind me that they were at least in the 60s because he'd get one when he went to the dentist and was treated, and when he behaved, he got a troll doll. This seems to be a thing that Hollywood is always done, but it's kind of doubling down on it now and taking an existing property that's not a story and making a movie out of it because there's a certain amount of name and brand recognition. You saw that with Angry Birds earlier this year. Everybody knows what Angry Birds is. Everybody play, not everybody, but a lot of people play the game. And they said, well, great, let's make a movie of this. And that's how you got the movie The Angry Birds. And now we've got one for Trolls, which isn't even about a game. It's about a toy. So the popular toy gets their own movie about a group of tiny but always happy creatures who live in the forest and the monsters that want to devour them.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet.
Poppy is the happiest troll of all the trolls.
How do you always look on the bright side?
And Branch is the opposite. I don't do high fives.
Slap it, boss.
Nope.
Little slappy? Make daddy happy?
Fine.
Too slow.
Oh, snap.
This is a story about happiness. How far some would go to get it. And how far we went to get it back.
What's your plan?
To rescue everyone and make it home safely.
All right, like I said, this reminds me a lot of Angry Birds because it's a half-baked idea. And that's the problem with Angry Birds. Angry Birds isn't a story. Angry Birds was a setup. And then they kind of had to shoehorn the story into it. And Trolls is the same way. They're just dolls. I mean, it's not even like Lego. Like when they did the Lego movie, yeah, essentially that's making a movie about toys. But you have to put a good story to it. And then they use all this branding humor. But there's so much depth to Legos. And that's why the Lego movie worked. That's why you can make Barbie movies that they release on DVD and video. Those work because Barbie is a character that you can put in different things. The Trolls are trying to make this story out of them. And it's a stretch. And it's kind of a horrifying story too, because these creatures, it's called Bergens, I think. I'm assuming the Bergens are normal size like us and the Trolls are just tiny. And they eat them. And when they eat them, they become happy. And Anna Kendrick plays a princess troll who is trying to save her friends and family, and she partners up with a depressed troll played by Justin Timberlake. And there's a lot of music to it. When you got Andrew Kendrick and Justin Timberlake, you're going to end up with a lot of music. And the music is fine, and it's bright in color, and it's got a lot of energy to it, but it just doesn't hit the mark in terms of story. It just feels forced. And I mean forced the way Angry Birds felt forced. It's trying so hard to hit all these levels that seem to be mandated by the studio. I mean, as a kid's movie, it's fine. But there is something really off-putting about this. There's a certain subtext here. Because the character of Anna Kendrick's princess, she's always happy. She's always happy, loves hugs, and her happiness and exuberance is infectious. And Justin Timberlake's character is a depressed troll. I mean, to the point that he's muted down with his colors. And he's grumpy. He's a rabbit from Winnie the Pooh. He's Ren from Ren and Stimpy. He is not the flibbertigibbet. He is the serious, logical, practical thinker. You're talking about the ants and the grasshopper type story. Part of what bothered me about it is the message of the movie seems to be you should be happy all the time. And if you're not happy all the time, there's something wrong with you. And there's a whole lot of problems with that because you shouldn't be happy all the time. You have complex human emotions. It is okay to be sad. It is okay to be angry. It is okay if you don't want a hug. But there seems to be this overbearing, if you aren't going to sing in the group and dance, there's something wrong with you. There's this weird conformity to this movie that goes beyond your standard, hey, just be happy kind of thing. And when we've seen this type of character developed before, but that's a prevailing theme in this movie, that if you're not happy all the time and you don't always want hugs, then something's wrong with you. And compare it to last year's Inside Out, which is such a fantastic movie. They nail the complexity of human emotions because the character of the princess in this movie is sort of like Joy from Inside Out, but Joy, and in the sense that she wants everyone to be happy. But the ultimate message of Inside Out is it's okay to not always be happy. And it's okay to have something happen that makes you both feel happy and sad at the same time. That sometimes emotions are meshed together and interwoven, and that's okay. But in this movie, it's not. To the point that they almost shun this guy because he's not that. And then on top of this, it has this weird anti-pharmaceutical message because the story is about these grumpy creatures that are always upset that take a small thing, put it in their mouth and swallow it and suddenly become happy. This is not me taking a stretch. This is not being, oh, you're overanalyzing it. No, it's pretty obvious if you watch the movie, which is odd coming from Hollywood, and everyone's on anti-anxiety medications in Hollywood. But that goes back to the whole shaming people. If you are having anxiety and depression issues, it is okay to talk to your doctor and get treated for it. And that treatment may involve pharmaceuticals. That does not mean that you're weak. And that's my big problem with Trolls, is the underlying message is kind of horrifying. So I'm going to have to say that Trolls kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Eagle Huntress. A young girl from Mongolia takes up hunting with eagles, which causes a stir in the community who sees it as a man's sport.
For over 1,000 years, the nomads of the Altai Mountains have hunted with golden eagles. A precious skill that has traditionally been handed down from father to son. But now a young girl is setting out to become a master eagle hunter. Meet Ashelpan. She's 13 years old, and she's a total natural.
First of all, this is one of the most beautiful movies you're going to see this year. The scenery and the cinematography is gorgeous because not only is it this beautiful landscape of Mongolia, but they attach cameras to the eagle and you see it from the eagle's point of view. And gender politics has become so big in movies nowadays. And here is a great example of a real world example of a real, can I say, overly conservative lifestyle to these nomadic farmers out in Mongolia, where somebody is breaking through a glass ceiling in a place that they don't even really have glass. It's a fascinating look at another culture and the sexism that does go on. It's an inspiring movie. It's a beautifully shot movie. And that's why it kept my interest, because it wasn't just about can a girl do it. It's about the girl's journey. And it's going to be one that you're going to see. I wouldn't be surprised if you see it nominated for an Academy Award. The Eagle Huntress is a neat movie. It just opened in limited release, so you may have to look for it, but it's definitely worth a trip to the cinemas to see something that is not like Doctor Strange or the latest big budget movie. So I'm going to have to say The Eagle Huntress totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Doctor Strange and Closet Monster.
Oppan Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. Let's do the big one that I think is going to win the weekend in terms of box office, and that is Doctor Strange. Benedict Cumberbatch stars as a world-renowned surgeon who, after a debilitating injury, learns to become a sorcerer and defend our planet from threats from other dimensions.
Through the mystic arts, we harness energy and shape reality.
How do I get from here to there?
How did you become a doctor?
Study and practice, years of it.
There's a strength to him.
But is he ready?
Be careful which path you travel down, Strange. Stronger men than you have lost their way.
Just by that description alone, leading into the trailer, this movie is out there. It is very much out of the box. And that's the way Doctor Strange has been. My only real recollection as a kid with Doctor Strange is when I would go visit my grandparents in Cleveland. My grandmother had in a drawer, like some books that like activity book, coloring books, and a couple comic books that somehow she ended up with. Then there was a Doctor Strange comic book in there, and I'd read it a couple times. And that stuff was out there then. I mean, this is like the 70s. Doctor Strange is an out of the box character. And that's part of what I love about where Marvel's going with this. Because we've gone down the route of the familiar ones. We've done even though Iron Man wasn't well known before the movies, he's essentially Batman with an iron suit. You know, I mean, so people can wrap their brain around Iron Man. Everybody knows who the Hulk is, and that's from being on a TV show. And everybody, even though Thor was a little bit out there, you get it, Norse god and all. But Doctor Strange, that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, he's a sorcerer. And in this universe where you have sort of science-y magic, which is kind of what you see with Loki and Thor, but also just very hard science fiction with the Incredible Hulk and Iron Man and even Spider-Man, who's brought himself back into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So Doctor Strange in the onset is not your typical hero. Now, with that said, the movie itself is essentially an origin story. And I've been on record multiple times on how much I don't like origin stories. I want to clarify that. For Doctor Strange, you absolutely need an origin story. You cannot just have a sorcerer show up and start spinning his hand around in an Avengers movie. You have to introduce the audience to this because most people don't even know who Doctor Strange is. You've heard of the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man, but Doctor Strange, real out there. But the origin story is your basic thing of this guy who falls down on his luck and is looking for redemption, and he discovers these powers and he has these abilities. And then from there on, he learns to become a hero and in the way has to go up against a bad guy. And that's what you see in every single opening of a Marvel movie. We don't need any more Spider-Man origin stories or Incredible Hulk origin stories, but we certainly need one for Doctor Strange, and that works. While it's doing that, it's also acclimating the audience to this aspect of the universe that has previously not been accessed in other Marvel movies. And it's, again, also out there. And one of the things that makes this movie innovative and different than other superhero movies, like I said, it's just an origin story, but it's put against this really bizarre backdrop. It's mind-bending. It's interdimensional, and you see stuff in here where I was a little bit worried. I'm like, oh, they're just going to go into clouds and they're going to go into sparkly magic. I mean, this is not Harry Potter magic. Harry Potter magic is very straightforward. And it's a very, if there were wizards who were just wandering around the world, this is what they do. It's also not Lord of the Rings magic, which falls under these rules of mythical creatures. Director Scott Derrickson takes us into the other dimensions and uses visuals that I've never seen before. When Doctor Strange starts taking his journey into the astral world and beyond, it's breathtaking. And honestly, if you're going to go see this movie, see it on the biggest screen possible. If you can see it in IMAX, see it in IMAX. There are few movies out there, maybe one or two a year that come around that I say it's worth seeing in IMAX. And this is one of them. For the 3D immersive feel of the entire universe that Doctor Strange exists in. And you also see stuff visually that they do in the action sequences that we may have seen it hinted at. And there's a certain amount of homage being paid to Inception, even though that's a very different movie. But I've heard people even say to me the scenes from the trailer with the city folding over on itself. There's definitely a nod to Inception because you see that. You see the buildings and the cities folding in on itself in this one sequence, in a couple sequences, actually. And there's a scene where they're basically doing kind of a hallway fight like Joseph Gordon-Levitt does in Inception, but for very different reasons. And in that sense, you've seen it before, but this takes it so many more steps beyond. The scenes of the cities folding and moving around and jumping from building to building and going up and down is so conceptual. Even if the story was terrible, this movie would be a recommend just to see what they've done because they're doing things with these action sequences that you've not seen before. And that's one of the greatest things about the movie. If you remember when Independence Day came out, the sequel to Independence Day came out this summer, one of my big problems with it was I'm like, well, we've seen all this before, not just in the last couple of years, but in the last couple of months, you know, aliens blowing things up, cities getting destroyed. So this one actually takes a different route. It does something, I'm not going to say what they do at the end, but they kind of twist it around. They do something very different than every Marvel movie and every superhero movie seems to end with a big destruction of a city or a portion of a city. This one takes a different approach to it, and that's what I really appreciated. And then on top of it, you got the acting. I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch is really good as Doctor Strange. I think he's well cast. Chiwetel Ejiofor is good in it. Tilda Swinton is good. For all the whitewashing complaints, Tilda Swinton, I'm normally not a fan, but I thought she was great in this movie. Rachel McAdams plays a somewhat sidelined character. She's got less depth than Natalie Portman does in the Thor movies, but she's still is good in the role, and I'm looking forward to seeing more. I don't feel like this was a waste of time. I don't feel like we went through motions, but this reminds me a bit of Guardians of the Galaxy, where it takes a step into a much greater world that looks interesting and makes me want to explore more. And this shows that Marvel still has some tricks up its sleeve. So I'm going to say Doctor Strange totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quickly about Closet Monster. In this one, a young man comes to terms with his own sexuality, which affects how he is treated at school and, more importantly, by his overbearing father.
What are you thinking about?
Some guy from work.
So is he into you?
I don't think so.
Thanks for the shirt.
Watch it, man.
I'm sorry, man. I thought you were my son's girlfriend.
Girlfriend?
This is essentially a coming out movie. It's very well done. I mean, it deals with the struggles and the stress and the issues that any young man who is coming to terms with being gay is going to face. Now, I'm not gay, so I personally have not gone through that, but for my friends who are gay and people I've talked to about and other things I've seen, this certainly seems like it hits all those marks. If there's any criticism I have to it, is it feels very derivative from a lot of queer cinema that we saw in the 90s. And I use the term queer cinema because while it's not the preferred term now, you know, you would say LGBT cinema, that's kind of how it was looked at in the 90s. And it feels like any number of dozen or so movies that came out in the 90s dealing with coming out. And so it doesn't feel like in that sense it's breaking any new ground, but I don't know if it needs to because these are universal themes to people who are coming to terms with their sexuality. The one thing it does do that's interesting is it does have a certain amount of surrealism to it. He has this hamster that he converses with. And that's kind of cool because it's out of the box and it's different. I've heard somebody else compare it to Cronenberg, where Cronenberg has some real down-to-earth things, but then, you know, has sort of weird body horror moments and surreal moments. And it does kind of feel that way. But ultimately, it's a strong, though somewhat retreaded story of coming out. So Closet Monster kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Hacksaw Ridge, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. For the final segment, we're wrapping up. We got one more movie to talk about. Before we do that, I want to address something that came up during the break. The question of why I didn't cover the Wonder Woman trailer this week. That dropped this week. And I had two other trailers in the trailer park. Part of it is because I wanted to cover those two because I hadn't talked about them yet. I covered the first Wonder Woman trailer. So I'm not going to bother playing the new Wonder Woman trailer, but it does bring up an issue that I had with it that I had brought up, and I got taken to the task for it. Part of my issue with Wonder Woman from the beginning, not with Wonder Woman, rather, but with the casting of Gal Gadot. Now, I at once said she's real skinny and she's thin and she's a model, but she doesn't quite have the Amazonian look. She doesn't look like she can kick somebody's butt. I will take that back. I will apologize for saying that because I think she fits the role physically now. I think she still could be thicker in terms of muscle mass that you expect from a Wonder Woman type. But Gal Gadot proved herself as a worthy image in Batman versus Superman. And we're seeing this in the trailer. There's a lot of shots of her fighting and jumping around and being Wonder Woman. And look, don't get me wrong. I have no problem with that. My problem with Gal Gadot, and which has been my problem since the beginning and has never not been my problem, is she's just not a good actor. Now, you can sit there and say she's not acting in her native tongue. She's Israeli, so she speaks Hebrew, and English is her second language. And sometimes that makes sense. Like Penelope Cruz is not a native English speaker. She's Spanish, and so she speaks Spanish. And so when she plays a role, she's usually terrible at acting. Now, if she's playing a part where she's somebody who's struggling a bit with the language and the accent, she's actually quite good. Like if you saw Vicky Cristina Barcelona, she's actually really good in that. And if you go to her Spanish language work, Penelope Cruz is quite good. Gal Gadot, I don't think any amount of language barrier is going to fix this for her. She's just not a good actor. And this is not me looking at the Wonder Woman trailer and dismissing her as an actor based on the Wonder Woman trailer. This is me having seen the Fast and Furious movies, having seen Criminal with Kevin Costner, where she was playing Ryan Reynolds' widow. This is talking about Keeping Up with the Joneses just a couple weeks ago, where she just is not good at delivering lines. And I'm sure she's a sweet girl, but she can't deliver lines. She is not a good actor. And that shows not just in the first trailer, but this trailer as well. Like, I'm not going to play it for you. You can go find it online. But she has a little bit of voiceover, and then she has like one or two lines in the trailer. There's literally more lines to Chris Pine in the trailer than her. And somebody took me to task on that. It was like, well, you know, this is the way movies work. This is giving the story. I'm like, compare it to any other superhero movie. Unless it's something like Superman, like the Man of Steel, even then, Henry Cavill's not that great of an actor. He's just a pretty face. And here he is in the Superman movies. He just is not a very good actor. And that's why he doesn't have very many lines in the trailer. Keanu Reeves in The Matrix does not have very many lines because he's not a very good actor and can't really deliver them. This is arguably the first female big budget superhero movie, if you of course ignore Elektra and Catwoman and anything from the Resident Evil or Underworld series. Let's just ignore those that people conveniently ignore when they say this is the first female superhero movie. You'd think that the Wonder Woman movie would have more of Wonder Woman's character in it instead of just a lot of her running around and fighting. And when I see that, it looks like they're trying to work around her bad acting. And it looks great. Makes a great trailer. I still question whether her acting is going to be able to carry an entire movie, or if they're going to put it all on Chris Pine's shoulder, which kind of defeats the purpose of having a neo-feminist superhero movie. All right. Those are my thoughts on Wonder Woman. Let's talk about the other movie I need to review this week, and that is Hacksaw Ridge. This biopic tells the extraordinary bravery of Desmond Doss, a conscientious objector during World War II who served as a medic at the Battle for Okinawa.
I can't stay here while all them go fight for me.
What, you figure this war is just going to fit in with your ideas?
While everybody else is taking life, I'm going to be saving it. And that's going to be my way to serve.
Private Doss, you are free to run into the hellfire of battle without a single weapon to protect yourself.
There's something you gotta see.
Who did this?
That's the coward.
We have to go back up tomorrow. And they're not gonna go up there without you.
This is directed by Mel Gibson, and I have to just first say, I think it's about time the world forgives Mel Gibson. Yes, he has had a checkered past. Yes, he has said some things that are not very nice. But he is a fantastic filmmaker. And of all of his movies I've seen, they're very, very well directed. He is a fantastic director. Braveheart, Passion of the Christ, even Apocalypto. These are really impressive directing efforts. It was sad to just see his career just get squelched, blown out like a flame, and struggling and doing like direct-to-video stuff like Get the Gringo and Machete Kills. This is a great reminder that Mel Gibson, for all of his foibles, is a brilliant director. I'm not going to bury the lead. This is easily one of the best movies of the year. And it struck me in the middle of it because I wasn't expecting it. I thought the trailer kind of looks kind of corny. Reminds me of the trailer of Brooklyn last year, where it just felt sort of cheesy. It felt like a Lifetime movie. This one, there's nothing new in terms of what you see in a military movie. You see the person's early life, you see him going through basic training, and you see him on the battlefield. The big difference is the character and the story about this guy who's a conscientious objector who will not carry a gun. Going into battle without a gun, that's pretty ballsy to do anyways. They have Vince Vaughn play the drill instructor, and he's actually... It's not just a rehash of Full Metal Jacket, where you have Arlie Ermey doing his speeches and stuff. You kind of get that stuff rehashed a lot, even in a movie like Starship Troopers, which derived from Full Metal Jacket. This one does something different because it has Vince Vaughn, who isn't quite the same as Arlie Ermey or Clancy Brown from Starship Troopers. The real impact of this movie is the battle. The battle for Okinawa, which was a hard-fought, brutal slaughterhouse of a battlefield. And it does not pull its punches. If you are weak of stomach or easily turned off by gore and violence, you're not going to want to see this movie. Also, if you are one of our veterans who has had battlefield experience and you are still processing a lot of the horrors you've seen, you need to know that going in. This may be great because it could be cathartic and it could help you bring some stuff to the surface that you need to deal with. It could also be very shocking and rough for you emotionally. It's an emotionally powerful film. It's both jubilant at times and devastating. I'm pretty much at a loss of words to explain the impact of the last 30 minutes of the film, which is combat in the most horrible conditions and with some of the most brutal and violent things possible. And here's this guy who's this character is a real guy and how he becomes a hero. I mean, you can read his story, but you should go see the movie because Hacksaw Ridge puts so much in context about battle and about war and heroism and morals and sticking to your principles. I can't say enough good things about this movie. I'm going to say Hacksaw Ridge totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quick about the box office. Last week, I predicted $30 million for Inferno. Thanks a lot, Ron Howard. It was about half that. Inferno did not do well. Everyone says it fizzled. The silver lining for the movie is it's doing well overseas. It's not like the same disparity as Warcraft, but you're seeing more of that happen where there's a movie that just kind of performs poorly or really underperforms like this is, but doing well overseas. The other thing is it doesn't have a huge budget. It was, I think, what, 60, 70 million? as opposed to being $150 million or $200 million. Boo, A Madea Halloween, broke its back and ended up taking the second week in a row with $17 million, which is depressing as all get out. And Inferno was the only big movie opening, which is kind of sad. Anyways, this week, I think Doctor Strange is going to win. I think you're looking at 70 to 80 million easy. Partly it's getting great word of mouth already, just in preview audiences. So it's going to hold well over the weekend. Its biggest struggle is it's going up against two movies that, well, one that's really good, Hacksaw Ridge. But that one's going to struggle a bit because of the violence and the R rating. It's not going to be as broad of an appeal as Doctor Strange. Although I think Hacksaw Ridge is definitely going to have legs through award season. And then Trolls, which I think is going to be a family-friendly crowd pleaser. Mark my words, this will be one of the biggest weekends of the holiday season. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. We have Star Trek Beyond, which was a well-received but not well-seen Star Trek movie. It's okay as a throwaway film. Works better as just a science fiction adventure movie and not a Star Trek movie. Bad Moms, which is a lot of fun. That's great for any suburban mom who struggles to be the super mom and gets annoyed with the Pinterest moms out there. Nine Lives, which is that ridiculous cat movie with Kevin Spacey. And then I'd be remiss if I forgot to mention this because my wife is such a fan. Outlander Season 2 is out on DVD and Blu-ray. That is it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Almost Christmas because it's almost Christmas, Arrival, and Shut-In. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.